Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a little different. We're strapping on our hiking boots, and we're venturing into the world of biblical archaeology.
Sounds exciting.
Yeah. Specifically, we're going to be exploring the land of the Bible itself. And we've got some fascinating research and insights from Dr. Jeffrey Houdin's lectures to guide us. It's going to be like we're getting our own personal Yediot Haaretz experience. That's Hebrew for knowledge of the land. Just like those Israeli immigrants who wanted to connect with their new homeland, you know?
Oh, that's a great comparison. You know, and just like those excursions, we're not just going to be digging up pottery shards, you know?
Yeah, right, right.
We're talking about understanding the historical geography, the lay of the land, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's the key to unlocking a deeper understanding of the archaeology.
Yeah. Okay, so paint a picture for me. We're talking about more than just artifacts, right? We're talking about the whole context in which they existed.
Exactly. Exactly. Think about it this way. You wouldn't try to understand New York City without knowing about its boroughs or its subway system or its crazy rush hour traffic, right? You'd miss the whole story.
Right. So let's start with the bigger picture then.
Yeah.
The land of the Bible is part of a region called the Fertile Crescent, right?
Mm-hmm.
A name I've heard but never really understood. Why is it such a big deal?
Well, it's often called the cradle of civilization, and for good reason. Imagine this. This arc of fertile land stretching from the Persian Gulf up through Mesopotamia and down into the Nile Valley.
Whoa.
This is where some of the earliest and most influential civilizations in history took root and blossomed.
Wow, that's a lot of history. And the land of the Bible, or what we call the Southern Levant, is right in the middle of it all.
Right, and it acted like a bridge between these powerful empires. You got Egypt on one side, Mesopotamia on the other. You can imagine how many armies marched back and forth trying to control this vital corridor.
Oh, I bet. And that probably explains why we don't see the same kind of grand intact structures in this region that we find in, say, Egypt or Rome.
Exactly. Exactly. All that conflict meant a lot of destruction and rebuilding, armies marching through, empires clashing. It takes a toll on the archaeological record, which is a shame, but also makes you wonder about the stories those ruins could tell, right?
Totally. Speaking of stories, what about the land itself? When I think of the Bible, I imagine endless deserts. Is that accurate?
It's a common misconception.
Oh, okay.
The Holy Land is surprisingly diverse. You've got coastal plains, rolling hills called the Shephelah, the rugged central hill country, the dramatic Jordan Rift Valley, and even the Transjordan Plateau. It's like a sampler platter of landscapes.
Wow, that's a lot packed into one area. Each region must have like a unique character, its own story to tell.
Absolutely. Think about it. The resources, the climate, all that influenced how people lived and interacted with the land. You got farmers cultivating fertile valleys, shepherds tending their flocks on the hillsides.
Traders navigating ancient roads, armies on the move. It must have been quite a bustling place.
Bustling and sometimes volatile, especially in a place like the Jordan Rift Valley.
Oh, really?
That's a site you don't forget. A massive depression formed by the meeting of tectonic plates.
Wait, so that's what causes all those earthquakes they talk about in the Bible?
You got it. The shifting of those plates creates a lot of seismic activity. Remember the earthquake during the reign of Uzziah mentioned in the book of Amos?
Right, right.
Even the prophet found that one noteworthy.
Wow, it must have been a major event. Didn't something like that happen at Qumran too?
Yes. That's where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, and we see evidence of earthquake damage there. The Dead Sea itself is part of the Rift Valley, you know, the lowest point on Earth. And it's so salty because it's a terminal lake. All the water flowing in has no outlet, so the minerals just concentrate.
So no swimming in the Dead Sea unless you want to just bob around.
Pretty much. It's like Mother Nature's giant salt bath. Just one of the many unique things about this landscape.
So to navigate this amazing and sometimes intense terrain, they must have had some pretty sophisticated road systems back then.
They did. These ancient roads weren't just paths, they were lifelines for trade, communication, even military movements. Think of the King's Highway in Transjordan, winding through the highlands. Kings traveled it, and you can still drive it today. It's a real journey back in time.
I bet. And then there's the Israelites' journey through the desert under Moses. Talk about rough terrain.
That was the desert highway, not exactly a smooth ride. And then you have the Way of the Patriarchs running north-south along the spine of the hill country. Imagine it like the main artery connecting the heartland of the region.
And of course, you can't forget the Via Maris, the coastal route connecting Egypt all the way to Damascus.
Right.
That must have been a major hub of activity.
Oh, absolutely. A real melting pot of cultures and ideas, all thanks to that road. It's fascinating to see how these paths crisscross the land, each with its own stories to tell.
Yeah, for this next part of our journey, I want to zoom in on a region that has always captured my imagination. Galilee. What makes this area so special?
Galilee is full of surprises, starting with its unique geography. The Sea of Galilee, nestled among the hills, gets these sudden, dramatic storms, the kind mentioned in the Gospels. You know, when Jesus calmed the storm.
Wait, those weren't just literary flourishes. They were based on actual weather patterns.
Exactly. The wind gets funneled through the valleys, picks up speed over the water, and boom, you got a biblical-level storm.
No wonder those fishermen on the Sea of Galilee were so skilled, they had to be ready for anything.
Mm.
Speaking of history, I know Galilee is considered a very important region for early Israelite history.
It is. Yohanan Aharoni, one of the pioneers of biblical archaeology in Israel, found early Israelite villages in Upper Galilee.
Wow.
It really shows how far back settlement in this area goes, even to the time of the patriarchs we read about in the Bible.
So when we're reading those stories, this is the landscape where they were happening. It's amazing to think about.
It is. And the discoveries keep coming. There's Kadesh, an ancient city with layers upon layers of history, and Baram with its stunning synagogue ruins from the Second Temple period.
And then there's Yodfat.
Oh, yeah. Yodfat, a site forever linked to the Jewish revolt against Rome. Today, it's just ruins on a hilltop, but it was once a vibrant city playing a crucial role in that historical drama.
It must make you think about the resilience of the people who called this land home facing those kinds of challenges.
Absolutely. And speaking of resilience, let's shift our focus to Sepphoris, a flourishing Greco-Roman city during Jesus' time. It was right next door to Nazareth, but you never hear about it in the Gospels. Isn't that strange?
It is. Why wouldn't they mention such a grand city?
It's a mystery that has puzzled scholars for centuries. Some even theorize that Joseph and Jesus may have worked there as stonemasons. Imagine that, Jesus the carpenter from Nazareth, contributing to these grand Roman structures.
That's an incredible thought. What a stark contrast it would have been, going from the grandeur of Sepphoris to the everyday life of Nazareth.
Right. It really makes you think about what life must have been like in both places, the different worlds existing side by side.
Before we move on, let's talk about some of those mountains and valleys that define this region. Mount Tabor, for instance. That's more than just a pretty peak, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Its beauty is undeniable, and its historical significance goes way back. Remember the story of Deborah and Barak defeating the Canaanites?
Oh, right.
Mount Tabor played a key role in that victory.
Right, that epic battle. It's amazing how these geographical features played such a part in those stories.
It's like they're characters themselves. And what's fascinating is that Mount Tabor was associated with fertility in ancient times. Even today, some Israeli couples will visit the mountain, hoping for good luck and starting a family.
So from ancient rituals to modern traditions, that mountain holds a special place in people's hearts. What about other mountains in the region? I've heard of Mount Carmel. It's connected to the prophet Elijah, right?
Exactly. Mount Carmel isn't a peak like Tabor. It's a long ridge stretching towards the sea. That's where that showdown with the prophets of Baal happened. A dramatic setting for a dramatic event.
It seems like dramatic events and landscapes go hand in hand in this region. What about the valleys? Any stories there?
Well, how about the Jezreel Valley? It might seem peaceful, but it's been a strategic highway throughout history.
Oh, wow.
Armies marched through it, battles were fought, and in World War I, it was the site of the last great cavalry charge. Talk about a place that's seen it all.
Wow, I never would have guessed that. What other historical events happened there?
Oh, so many. For one, Tel Jezreel, the location of King Ahab and Jezebel's palace, is right there in the Jezreel Valley. And Ein Herod, where Gideon selected his army, and Mount Gilboa, where King Saul met his tragic end.
It's almost like every inch of this land is soaked in biblical history.
It really is. And it's not just biblical history. It's layers upon layers of human experience all playing out against this incredible backdrop.
Okay, we got to talk about the Sea of Galilee. It feels like the heart of this whole region.
It is. Its shape, its importance for freshwater and fishing, not to mention all the stories from the Gospels. It's truly a special place.
And there are so many important sites around the sea, like Magdala, Capernaum, and Bethsaida. Each one deserves its own deep dive.
They really do. But for now, let's shift our focus slightly north to Lake Hula.
Oh, okay.
This lake has a fascinating story because it's gone through some dramatic transformations over the years. It used to be a malaria-ridden swamp, but early Zionist settlers worked tirelessly to drain it, turning it into fertile farmland.
Wow, what an undertaking.
It was. Today, a portion of it remains as a national park, a reminder of both the power of human intervention and the delicate balance of nature.
That's a great point. The landscape we see today is the result of both natural forces and human actions over centuries. It really makes you appreciate the complexities of history.
It does. And speaking of amazing views, imagine standing on the Mount of Beatitudes overlooking the Sea of Galilee.
The very place where Jesus gave the Sermon on the Mount. It must be an incredible feeling to stand there.
It is. And from that vantage point, you can see landmarks like the Horns of Hattin, where the Crusaders were defeated, and Mount Arbel, this towering cliff that offers breathtaking views of the entire region. People call it the Rock of Gibraltar of Israel.
Wow, I can almost feel the wind on my face taking in all that history and beauty.
It's truly awe-inspiring. You feel a tangible connection to the past in a place like that.
As we wrap up this leg of our journey, let's head to the northernmost region, the area around Dan, Hazor, and Mount Hermon. What awaits us there?
Well, both Dan and Hazor have some amazing archaeological remains, especially from the time of King Solomon. You really get a sense of the grandeur of that era when you see those sites.
It's a good reminder that this region wasn't always defined by conflict. There were times of peace and prosperity, too.
Exactly. And then there's Mount Holman, the highest peak in Israel. It's always snow-capped, and there's a sense of mystery surrounding it.
Speaking of mystery, earlier you mentioned Herod the Great transporting ice from Mount Hermon to Jerusalem for parties. That sounds pretty extravagant, even for a king.
It does, doesn't it? But according to the historian Josephus, Herod would have blocks of ice hauled all the way from Mount Hermon to Jerusalem just to impress his guests. Talk about going above and beyond.
Wow, I guess when you're the king, you can do that sort of thing. It certainly gives you a sense of his personality and maybe even a little bit of the culture at the time.
It definitely does.
Okay, that was an incredible journey through the Galilee region. So much history packed into one area. What stands out to you most from this part of the land of the Bible?
For me, it's how the land itself has shaped the course of history.
Mm-hmm.
Each mountain, each valley, even the Sea of Galilee, they all play a role in the stories we read in the Bible.
It's true. They're not just backdrops. They're active participants in those stories.
And that's what makes this kind of deep dive into the geography so fascinating. It adds a whole new layer of meaning to those ancient texts.
Absolutely. Well, get ready, because in part two of our exploration, we'll be heading south into the regions of Samaria and Judea. You won't want to miss it.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the land of the Bible.
Wow, that virtual tour of Galilee really blew me away. So much history packed into one region.
And we've only just scratched the surface. Today, we're heading south into the heartland of ancient Israel, Samaria and Judea.
Okay, now we're talking. This is where so much of the biblical narrative unfolds. I'm ready to uncover the secrets hidden in those hills and valleys.
Let's start with the Shephelah, that fascinating zone between the coastal plains and the central highlands. It's like where cultures and landscapes collide.
I like that collision zone. It makes me think of tectonic plates crashing together, creating something new and dramatic. Was it a volatile region?
Definitely. The Shephelah was often a battleground, especially between the Israelites and Philistines. Imagine rolling hills dotted with ancient tells, those mounds that mark the sites of ancient cities, witnessing the rise and fall of empires.
It's almost like a layer cake of history, each layer telling a different story.
That's a great way to think about it. And remember, the Philistines weren't just some faceless enemy in the biblical narrative. They were a real people with their own culture and ambitions, often clashing with the Israelites for control of this strategic region.
That's true. It's easy to forget that sometimes when you're reading those stories.
Hmm.
It wasn't just good guys versus bad guys. It was a clash of cultures, of ways of life.
Exactly. And because the Shephelah was so strategically important, it was constantly changing hands. A real hot potato, as they say.
I can only imagine the stories those hills could tell. Are there any particular sites in the Shephelah that stand out?
Well, one that comes to mind is the city of Gezer. It sat right at the crossroads of major trade routes, making it a highly coveted prize. Over the centuries, it was conquered by pharaohs, controlled by Canaanites, fortified by Israelites, even destroyed by Assyrians.
Wow. Talk about a tumultuous history. It must have been quite a place to live.
It certainly was. And the archaeological record at Gezer is fascinating. We found everything from Canaanite temples and Israelite gates to sophisticated water systems. It really paints a picture of life in those times.
It's amazing to think about those ancient people going about their daily lives, worshiping their gods, building their cities, all against this backdrop of constant change and upheaval.
It really is. And it reminds us that history isn't just about dates and battles. It's about real people living their lives, facing challenges, and leaving their mark on the world.
So from the strategic lowlands of the Shephelah, let's climb up into the rugged highlands of this central hill country. What can you tell us about this region?
Imagine a landscape of limestone hills, fertile valleys, and deep ravines. It's a tough environment, but it breeds tough people. This is where the Israelites truly made their mark, building their cities and establishing their kingdom.
This is the landscape I picture when I think of the Bible. Shepherds and farmers, terraced hillsides, fortified towns perched on strategic peaks.
Exactly. When you read those stories about David and Solomon, the rise and fall of kingdoms, the struggles and triumphs of the Israelite people, this is the stage where it all played out.
And at the heart of it all, of course, is Jerusalem.
Jerusalem, the city of David, the site of Solomon's temple. It's more than just a city. It's a symbol, a place that holds profound significance for Jews, Christians, and Muslims alike.
It's hard to wrap your head around all the history that's unfolded in that one place. It's been conquered, destroyed, rebuilt countless times, yet it's still there, a beacon of faith and resilience.
It's a testament to the enduring human spirit, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I can only imagine the stories those stones could tell.
Oh, they could tell volumes. From the ancient walls encircling the old city to the holy sites that draw pilgrims from around the world, Jerusalem is a living, breathing tapestry of history, faith, and human drama.
Before we get lost in the labyrinthine streets of Jerusalem, I'm curious about some of the other sites scattered throughout the Judean hills. What else can you tell us about this region?
Well, for starters, there's Hebron, a city steeped in biblical tradition. It's known as the burial place of the patriarchs Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's a site that's revered by both Jews and Muslims, a testament to the power of those ancient stories to bridge cultures and faiths.
It's amazing how those stories continue to resonate across millennia. It makes you realize how deeply rooted we are in the past.
It really does. And speaking of powerful stories, we can't forget Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus.
Bethlehem, a small town that became the center of the Christian world, a place of pilgrimage and devotion for millions.
Exactly. And for a glimpse into the spiritual life of ancient Israel, we have Shiloh, where the tabernacle, the portable sanctuary that housed the Ark of the Covenant, resided for over three centuries.
The Ark of the Covenant, that's like a direct link to the divine. Imagine the Israelites gathering at Shiloh, offering sacrifices, seeking guidance from God. What a powerful experience that must have been.
It must have been. Shiloh was a symbol of their covenant with God, a tangible representation of their faith. And, you know, speaking of tangible representations of faith, there's another site in Judea that I think you'll find fascinating. It's a bit different from the ancient cities and sanctuaries we've been discussing. It's called the Herodium.
The Herodium. Fill me in.
Well, you remember Herod the Great, the king who had a penchant for grand gestures, like importing ice for his parties?
Oh, yeah. He was quite the character.
He was. Well, the Herodium is another example of his ambition and his flair for the dramatic. Imagine a massive artificial cone-shaped mountain rising out of the Judean desert. It's a sight you don't forget.
Wait, an artificial mountain? You mean like a man-made mountain?
Exactly. Herod had this colossal structure built as a palace fortress, a symbol of his power and a place of refuge in times of trouble.
So it wasn't just a lavish palace. It was a strategic stronghold, too. Talk about thinking big.
Right. And what's amazing is that inside this man-made mountain, archaeologists have discovered an entire complex. Chambers, courtyards, even a theater. It's like an entire city hidden within a mountain.
Wow, that's incredible. It really gives you a sense of the ingenuity and skill of those ancient builders and the ambition of Herod the Great, of course.
He certainly left his mark on the landscape, didn't he? The Herodium stands today as a reminder of his reign, but it's also a testament to the human capacity for innovation and creativity.
It's fascinating to see how human actions have shaped this landscape over the centuries, alongside those incredible natural features. It's like we're walking in the footsteps of biblical figures, exploring the same hills and valleys they knew so well.
And with each step, we uncover more of the story, connecting the past to the present in a way that's both tangible and meaningful.
Okay, we've journeyed from the strategic lowlands of the Shephelah to the rugged highlands of Judea, encountering ancient cities, holy sites, and even man-made mountains along the way. But we can't talk about this region without delving into the heart of it all, Jerusalem.
You're absolutely right. Jerusalem deserves its own dedicated exploration, a deep dive into its layers of history, faith, and significance.
I'm ready. Let's unlock the secrets of this ancient and enduring city. Welcome back to our deep dive into the land of the Bible.
We're finally here, in the heart of it all, Jerusalem.
It's a city that's been on my mind since we started this journey. So much history, so much meaning, packed into one place.
It's true. Jerusalem is a crossroads of faith, a place where past and present seem to collide in a way you don't experience anywhere else.
And to really grasp the significance of Jerusalem, we need to understand its geography, right? It's not just about the buildings, but the very landscape itself.
Absolutely. Think of Jerusalem as a city built on a series of hills, each one with valleys and ridges surrounding it. This landscape has shaped the city's destiny from the very beginning.
So it's not just a city on a hill, it's a city of hills. And those hills aren't just random bumps in the terrain, are they?
Not at all. Think about Mount Zion, the Mount of Olives, the Temple Mount. These hills aren't just geographical features, they're imbued with deep religious and historical meaning.
Okay, let's break it down hill by hill. What's so special about Mount Zion?
Well, in biblical times, Mount Zion was the site of King David's city, the original fortified stronghold that grew into the Jerusalem we know today.
So you're saying it's the birthplace of Jerusalem? That's pretty amazing.
It is. And over time, the name Zion came to symbolize more than just a physical location. It became a symbol of the Israelite kingdom itself, representing their strength, their faith, their covenant with God.
A symbol of their identity, in a way. It's fascinating how a place can take on that kind of meaning. What about the Mount of Olives? It's right across from Mount Zion, isn't it?
Yes. Rising to the east of the city, the Mount of Olives is steeped in biblical history and tradition, particularly for Christians. It's said to be the place where Jesus ascended to heaven after his resurrection.
Oh, right. And it's also where the Garden of Gethsemane is located, where Jesus prayed the night before his crucifixion.
Exactly. A place of deep spiritual significance for Christians. And for Jews, it's been a traditional burial ground for centuries, with tombs dating back millennia.
So the Mount of Olives is a place where life and death, faith and history all seem to come together. It's almost overwhelming to think about.
It is. And then, of course, there's the Temple Mount, the most sacred site in Judaism.
Right. The site of Solomon's Temple, the Second Temple, and now the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's a place that's been at the center of so much conflict and devotion over the centuries.
A real flashpoint in history. And its location at the heart of Jerusalem on a raised platform makes it both physically and symbolically the center of attention.
It's amazing to me how these hills, these seemingly unchanging features of the landscape, have played such a central role in the story of Jerusalem.
They're not just hills. They're symbols, landmarks, battlegrounds, holy places. They really embody the complexity and layered history of the city.
Beyond those iconic hills, I know Jerusalem is also known for its tunnels and water systems. What's the story there?
Well, access to water was crucial for any city, especially during a siege. Jerusalem is no different. It has a whole network of tunnels and water systems that have kept it alive throughout the ages.
So we're not just talking about aqueducts bringing water from outside the city. There's a whole underground world beneath the streets.
Exactly. One of the most famous examples is Hezekiah's tunnel, built in the 8th century BC. It channeled water from the Gihon Spring outside the city walls into the Pool of Siloam inside the city.
A hidden lifeline, built by some pretty ingenious engineers. It reminds me of those secret passages you read about in adventure stories.
It does have that element of mystery, doesn't it? And it's not just Hezekiah's tunnel. There's a whole labyrinth of tunnels, cisterns, and chambers that have been used, explored, and rediscovered over centuries.
It's like a secret city beneath the city. Each one of those tunnels must have its own story to tell.
Absolutely. And each discovery adds to our understanding of the lives and challenges faced by the people who lived in Jerusalem throughout the ages.
Wow. We've covered so much ground in this deep dive, from the heights of Mount Hermon to the depths of Hezekiah's tunnel. What's the one thing you hope our listeners take away from our exploration of the land of the Bible?
For me, it's the understanding that the land itself isn't just a backdrop. It's an integral part of the story.
It's true. We can't truly understand the Bible, the history, the culture, without understanding the geography. They're interwoven.
Exactly. The mountains, valleys, rivers, deserts, they've all shaped the events, the beliefs, even the identity of the people who lived here.
So the next time we read a biblical passage or see a picture of Jerusalem, we should try to picture the landscape, the terrain, the climate.
It adds a whole new dimension to our understanding. It's like we're right there walking those ancient paths, feeling the same sun on our faces.
That sense of place, that connection to the past, it's something really special.
It is. And it's a reminder that the stories we tell, the faiths we hold dear, they're rooted in this real, tangible place, a place we've now explored together.
Well said. Thank you for being such a fantastic guide on this incredible journey. You've truly brought the land of the Bible to life for us.
It's been my pleasure, and I hope it inspires our listeners to keep exploring, to dig deeper into the history and geography of this fascinating region.
Maybe someday they'll even have the chance to experience it firsthand, to walk those ancient paths and discover their own connection to the past.
What a wonderful thought. The land of the Bible is waiting to be explored, and its stories are waiting to be told.
And on that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time for another fascinating exploration.